Learning Rav Dessler, his essays concerning Bechira, free choice. This is the final essay in this series, in this section. It's in the Hebrew volume on page 117, and it's called Chesed v'Habechira. Right? Kindness and free choice. Kindness and free choice. This comes, comes from a letter that he sent to from England to Ponovitch in 1948. I think at that point he was already commuting between England and Ponovitch. Later on he was the Mashkiach in Ponovitch. So he writes as follows: Shemati me'echad hamyuchad shebegdeiri hamamikim ashe yadati bedeiri. I heard from one of these very special great people in terms of deep thought, one of the great thinkers that I knew him, who I knew personally in my generation, in my time, Chochem Bekodesh. He was a man, a very wise man, a very holy man, Rav Yerucham HaLevi. Yerucham Levi, the Tzal, Midamir of Meshivas Mir. That's Rav Yerucham Levovitz, one of the great thinkers, one of the great Bali Musa, one of the great students of Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, and a very, very deep thinker, very beautiful Musa ideas. If one gets a chance to read his works, very, very inspiring. So Rav Yerucham, Dessler writes one of the ideas of Rav Yerucham as follows: Ki inyan habechira hatoiva, that the idea of making good choices, making the right choices, hu she'odem yivchal asum et atzmoy lemuchrach, that a person should make himself as if he is forced. Right? In other words, that even though we have free choices, you set your mindset as if you have to do it. You move into a mindset where you feel that you're totally forced to do what you need to do. Behind which is to say, she'yakir v'yedo, he should recognize and know, that in truth he's really forced to do the desire of his Creator. As even though Hashem gives us the mitzvahs as a command which we can or cannot do, but in terms of ourselves, we have to make ourselves that we have to do it. We have to tell ourselves this is something that we have to do, even though technically we don't really have to do it. But that's the attitude, that's the approach we should adopt for ourselves. Right? Is it not that in any situation where a person knows that if he doesn't do something, he's going to suffer? Right? It's a person knows if he doesn't take his medication, it's going to hurt him. So therefore, even though it's free choice, I don't have to take my medication, but I know that if I don't take it, there'll be consequences. So any situation where a person knows that if he doesn't follow what's correct, he will suffer. So then he will strive to do it. People don't want to suffer. So therefore, the minute you know that not doing something is going to lead to, it's going to hurt you in some way, so that itself will force you. That idea, the fact that you know that not fulfilling what's the right thing will hurt you, that itself will force you to do what you should be doing. Sometimes a person is forced into a situation technically. There's nothing that he can do about it. Come on. This is an example, interesting example. Hazirik is chaveira al odom acher v'hargoi. Right, one man pushed his friend onto another man and killed the one. A pushed B, and B fell on C, and C died. Okay, that's just an analogy. Yeah. So there, tshuvada hanizrak muchachu. So B didn't have a choice. Right, A pushed B, he was pushed, so he fell. He fell on C and C died. What could he do? So that's a situation where B did an action. B killed C, but he had no choice. He didn't have, there was no choice in the matter. It was just a consequence of what happened, of the situation. He had no other way but to fall on the other person, which hurt that person, and there's nothing he could do. So that's an example of technically being forced. Right, he was technically forced to kill the other person because of the situation.
V'yesh hechrech b'toch birur ha'akora.
So there's a similar type of being forced where it's through you clarify. There's a clarity in terms of what your options are. When it's clear to you your options, so therefore it could be, even though you have options, but the one choice is so clear that this is what you have to do, so then it doesn't become a question anymore. You know, it's, you're not forced to do it, but in a sense, your recognition of the situation forces you to do what you need to do. The example he brings here is, Kamo hanigzal al yidei listi mezuim. And if a person was robbed by armed robbers, shim lo yimso atzmo yis asher lo liyad hagazlan yichtzenu nefesh. Right, that if he doesn't hand over his cash to the robber, he's going to be shot. Right, a person is accosted in a dark alleyway, and the robber's holding a gun. He says, "Your money or your life. Give me your wallet, or I'm going to shoot you." So you have free choice. Yeah, well, you know, I'll think about it. Yeah.
Jack Benny said that. Yeah.
So the minute person recognizes that that's not really a choice, right? That's not really a choice. Obviously, you don't gain anything by having the person kill you. So therefore, so you have the free choice, but you don't have the free choice, because the minute you recognize that this is going to hurt you to take the other option, so you have to do it. So this also we would call a forced situation. You're being forced into a situation. You have to. Right. You have to act in a certain way. Ulefize, and accordingly. Misha yodea hatev, someone who knows very well, boru hulu believe, it's something that's clear in his heart. Dva gdulas riboinoi, the matter of the greatness of his creator. He knows who Hashem is. He knows how great Hashem is. Umakis oitzem tsaris hamamres piv, and he recognizes the great tragedy and the great troubles he would bring on himself by rebelling against Hashem. Hashem has asked him to do something, and he says no. Right? So, you know, who is Hashem? And, right, the one who gives him life, Hashem is who is everything, has asked him to do a certain thing, and he's going to say no. Surely that's going to have negative consequences. So such a person who recognizes the greatness of Hashem and the greatness of fulfilling the wills of the wishes of Hashem, so he will also find himself forced. Right, he'll find himself forced, lemalus rotzen kekoino. He'll find himself forced to fulfill the desire of his creator. What Rav Dessler has done here is he's drawn a parallel by the person who's held up by the highwayman, by the robber, the alleyway robber with a gun. He's drawing an analogy to that. So someone who recognizes really the severity of going against the will of Hashem, so then that would make the two situations almost the same. Right? That's a very strong analogy. He says, I found written in the writings of the Vilna Gaon, on this issue, Dovin Nifla Ma'od, something very, very wondrous, something very amazing. The whole Pula, every action a person does, Yesh Rotzen Koidim Lo, there is a desire that precedes the action. Aren't you want to scratch your ear? So right, okay. So then right, there's the desire, and then there's the action, right? So every action is preceded by desire. So number one is the desire, and number two is the ability to fulfill that desire. So it's two steps, right? I want to do something, and then I do it. Okay, I do. I have the physical. I have an arm. I can move my arm around, and therefore I can do what I want to do. Which is to say, the ability, the physical ability, is itself a utensil. It's a vessel to fulfill the desire and to bring the desire from theory into reality. Right? What I would like to do, I can make it a reality because I have the ability. I have the ability to turn my desire into a realized action, right? So therefore I want to, let's say the example, scratch my ear, so therefore I have the ability to move my arm and to scratch my ear. So therefore that's the two steps. Step one, the desire. Step two, the ability to carry out the desire. Amnam, however, Rotzen Hashem Yisboruch Hu Shenekayim Es Mitzvoisov. The will of Hashem, the desire of Hashem, is that we fulfill His mitzvahs. Aches HaYecholes Shaloi, however, His ability, right, the ability to carry out that action, which he could really force us to do. If Hashem wanted to force us to do a certain mitzvah, he could turn us into robots in a second, right? If Hashem could just say, you know, do this, do that, and we would do it automatically. Obviously, Hashem has that power to turn his desire into a reality. However, that part two, which is the ability to turn the desire into reality, Mosoloni is given to us. He says, no, you, I'm giving you the ability to fulfill my desire, and I'm giving you the, it's in your hands. I would like you to do act in this way. I would like you to do, perform these mitzvahs. I would like you to daven, to do chesed, etc. But I'm handing it over to you. I'm not going to force you. Right? And this is the free choice that it's within our ability to do if we so choose to do his desire. So that's really the way Hashem has set it up. You know, it's almost like in an unnatural way. Because the natural way is you want to do something and you do it. And it's almost without thinking. I want to stretch my leg. It's automatically I've stretched my leg, right? I don't even need, there's no delay at all. Right? I feel like stretching my leg. I feel like stretching my arms, right? I'm feeling tired. So therefore, it's almost automatic. That's the natural cause of events. With Hashem, Hashem's done it differently. There's his desire, and then there's the ability to carry out the desire that he's given to us. That's in our hands. That's his gift to us. That's our free choice. Mi'ata. According to this, from now, according to this idea, mechuyavim anu lachzir lo yisborach es yecholtoi. We are, this idea obligates us to give him back his ability. And is this really the ability to carry out the desire is really Hashem's. He's given it to us. So really the correct thing is for us to give it back to him. Now there's v'hainu shenaseh atzmeinu muchochim, which is to make ourselves like we're forced to carry out his will. If he would be commanding us and controlling us, we would be forced to do it. So we should do that for ourselves, because that's really the ideal. The ideal is that exactly what he wants us to do, we do it automatically. That's the ideal, right? Even though we have the free choice, we set our own mindset that that's how we're going to live our lives. We're going to act like just like a limb of Hashem's body, so to speak. Hashem wants me to do something, I'm doing it. That we're going to do the will of Hashem, of our Creator. So it comes out that what the Vilna Gaon has said is the same as what Rav Yerucham said. Rav Yerucham said also a person should make it that he's like he's forced. Once he recognizes who he's dealing with Hashem. It's like the same man who's held up in the alleyway, right? It's you have to do it. Obviously, you have to do it, right? That's the type of recognition we should live with. Anam hiruni dovze mafurish bedive rizal. He says that some of his students showed him this explicit in a midrash. This same idea also appears in a midrash. So we brought this idea from Rav Yerucham, we brought this idea from the Vilna Gaon, and here's a midrash. The midrash says, Omer Rav Levi, Shisha Dvorim Shamshim Es Odom. There are six organs that serve a person. Gimel Bereshusoi, three are under his control. Gimel Shaloi Bereshusoi, and three that are not in his control. Ha'ayin va'oizen va'choytem. The eye, the ear, and the nose. Shaloi Bereshusoi, not in your control. Right? When you see something, you've already seen it. Right? You can't control that I'm going to see, I'm not going to see. Your ear, you hear something, you've already heard it. So you can't control hearing. Your hearing works automatically. You're hearing automatically all the noise from outside, or whatever it is you're hearing, it's automatically channeled inside. Your ear works automatically. And your nose also, you smell something, immediately the smell has entered your nose, whatever it is you're smelling, and you don't have any control over that. So those are the three we don't control. Again, the eye, the ear, and the nose. We have no control over them. Ha-peh va-yad va-regel. However, the mouth and the hand and the foot, reshuso, that is in your control. That's, you know, I choose to open my mouth and speak, or right, I choose to move my hand, I choose to walk or not walk. Okay, that's the midrash. Now, says the midrash, he skips it on ahead a little bit. Now, when a person merits, when a person has merit, when a person really reaches a higher level, so then Hashem makes those that are in his control as though they're not in his control. So therefore, okay, in other words, that's almost the ideal. that our arm moves. Let's say you, with your hand you want to give charity, so it does it automatically. Like we said, that there are three that are not in your control and three that are in your control. But the ideal is that those three that are in your control should also not be in your control. That's what the Midrash is saying. In other words, that automatically we run to do the will of Hashem. Hashem says, go here, already I'm going. Right? Hashem wants me to do this, I'm already doing it. Hashem says, say this, daven, say these words, I'm already saying them. So that's the ideal. That's what the Midrash is saying, and therefore the Midrash is paralleling exactly the same idea. That even those, these three things, the mouth, the hand, and the leg, are in our control. And the ideal is that we're so in tune with the desire of Hashem that it's like they're not in our control. From here we see there's a type of heavenly help. There's a type of heavenly help that helps a person to make it like he's being forced. Like he's almost without any free will of his own. He has free will, but it's like he has no free will. And it's a type of elevation to perfection, where I'm absolutely the utensil of Hashem, I'm absolutely the vehicle of Hashem, I'm absolutely fulfilling the desire of Hashem. This is a type of perfection that we strive for. That a person should make himself as if he's been forced in any situation. Which is to say that he's totally set aside for the service of Hashem. I'm totally at your service. I'm 100% at your service, Hashem. Whatever you'll tell me, I'm ready to do. It's like if a person has a servant, right? If you see the king walking and he has a servant walking behind him, the servant does exactly what the king says, right? The king says the servant pick up that item from the floor, or pick me that fruit from the tree. But the servant is just there to fulfill the will of the master. So this is the ideal, that we put ourselves in the mindset that we are totally in the service of Kodesh Bohu. It's almost as if nothing remains of himself. This is the ideal. Almost nothing remains of himself. Zulas hanitzrach ligilui kvoy disbroch. Besides, that which does remain of ourselves, it's almost as if nothing remains of yourself, because you're totally bonded to Hashem's desire. You're like totally a robot to Hashem's desire, with the exception of our own desire to reveal the glory of Hashem. As by fulfilling the word of Hashem, we bring Hashem's presence into the world, which is the greatest tikkun that we can make. Right? We reveal Hashem in the world. Hashem is hidden from this world, but we bring His presence into the world, that the world should know Hashem. The whole world should recognize Hashem. Hashem lemelech al kol oretz. Hashem should be the king over the whole world. So we have, that's our desire, to show Hashem to the world. And this, we fulfill this desire by being this absolute servant to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is exactly what our rabbis have taught us in the saying. They taught us that the forefathers and the foremothers as well, they are the chariot. Right? The chariot, we know the chariot to be one of the great secrets of the Torah, the Kabbalistic secrets, is called the chariot. And the chariot is basically how Hashem runs this world. Right? The rules, the spiritual rules by which He runs this world. So we call that the chariot. However, it says, the rabbis have said that our patriarchs and matriarchs, Avos v'Imos, Hein Heinam Merkava, they are the chariot. In other words, they carry out the will of Hashem. And the analogy is like a motor car. You get into a motor car, and you turn on the engine, and the car's waiting. Right, and you put the foot on the gas, so it goes. You take your foot off the gas, it stops. You go north, it goes north. You go south, it goes south. The motor car doesn't express an opinion. Right? You don't say to the motor car, I feel like going to Yerushalayim. The car says, well, let's go to Be'er Sheva for a change. Right? The car doesn't express any desire at all. It's totally, you're the driver, and it's totally at your service. Wherever you drive it, that's where it drives. It doesn't, you turn the wheel this way, turns this way. There's no resistance. There's no resistance to the driver. The driver is in total control, and the car is totally at the service. So that is the concept of a Merkava. A Merkava is a chariot. What's the chariot? The chariot is just the vehicle which the rider drives on. So the rider is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and our patriarchs and matriarchs, they were the chariot. They were fulfilling the will of Hashem, and therefore revealing the glory of Hashem. Hainu b'chinas ha-tzadikim shenikru malochim. And this also matches, this also is in line with the idea that tzadikim are called malochim. Tzadikim are called angels. Sh'amalach einu boiche elamucha. Because an angel doesn't choose. An angel doesn't choose should he fulfill the will of Hashem or not. He just does the will of Hashem, right? Whatever Hashem sends him, the word malach also means a messenger. Right? Malach has a double meaning. So it means messenger and it means an angel. But it's the same thing. They are totally the messengers of Hashem. Whatever Hashem wants, they automatically do it. There's no questions asked. Begeder lo yisvu belechtum. There's no diverging from the main path. Okay, now we come on to something very important. The Erech Godel v'inyan zeh. Now, in this topic, this idea of making ourselves muchach, that we feel that we have to act as Hashem wants us to act, yesh li skalus b'toich haklal. Part of the, as an extension of this idea, which is really included in this idea, is the concept of including ourselves as part of the community. To see ourselves as part of a whole. As a small part of a whole. We are part of the Klal, of Klal Yisrael. We are part of the Jewish people. To see ourselves as an organ of this huge body which is called the Jewish people. Because this is the outstanding way in which a person can make himself as if he's been forced. Nevaya and Ina, which we're going to explain right now. What's the connection between the two ideas? To see ourselves, each person should see himself as part of the entire Jewish people, and the idea of being forced. How do these two ideas go together? As follows. Amu Chazal, our rabbis have said, ki afta l'recha kamoicha, to love your fellow Jew as yourself, klal godel hu b'teira. This is the great rule of the Torah, right? That your friends, your fellow Jews' needs are almost like your own needs. What he needs is like you need. His joys are your joys, his sorrows are your sorrows, his troubles are your troubles. Right? This is the great rule that there's a total unity amongst the Jewish people. Hillel Omer, Hillel taught, my da'alach sani, something which is hateful to you, right? Don't do it to your fellow Jew. Idach perushahu, this is what Hillel said. Hillel said, there was once a non-Jew came to Hillel and said, teach me the Torah while I'm standing on one leg, which sounds like tremendous chutzpah. But really what he meant was, it wasn't chutzpah, what he meant was give me directions that I can follow, that I can now live as a Jew, right? Without teaching me the whole of Shas, tell me exactly how I should live, that I should be living as a Jew. You know, short instructions that I can follow. So he said to him, what's hateful to you, don't do to your fellow Jew. And the rest, all of the rest of the Torah is just an explanation, it's just an elaboration on that one idea, right? The idea being that it's, What affects me affects my entire people. Hainu, Shebal Chesed, which is to say a person who reaches the level of being a Baal Chesed, in a sheaf, also he loses his atzmo lacherim, so his drive, his wish, is to give himself over to others. Right? That's the true Baal Chesed, a person who makes Chesed his speciality. He is a person of Chesed, so then his whole drive, his whole ambition, is to give himself to others. Right? I'm there for you. I give myself to you. Your concerns are my concerns. Which is to say that it's almost like I don't exist. I nullify myself to you. This is the exact opposite of the snatcher. The snatcher is the person who's totally self-centered, so totally selfish. The self-centered person, he wants everyone to be doing his will. He wants to manipulate other people that they should be acting for him. They should be making him wealthy, and they should be serving him, and they should be flattering him, and they should be elevating him. That's the opposite of the Baal Chesed. Baal Chesed looks to nullify himself to others. The snatcher looks to nullify others to himself, that everyone should be in his service. He knows how to use people. That's the expression. He knows how to use people. He knows how to get them to do what he wants. So therefore, he wants it all. It's all for himself. They are nothing. The chatvan, right? The snatcher says that they are nothing except how they can serve me. Otherwise, they have no importance. That's the ultimately selfish, self-centered person. No one else is worth anything. But if I can use them, then they have some value. They're as valuable as how much I can use them. The Baal Chesed is the exact opposite. I have no value. I'm totally in the service of others. They have supreme value. And any way I can help others, within my abilities, right? If I can afford it, if I have the time, if I have the energy, but within my abilities, any way I can help others, I will be there for them. I am there for them. It's like I don't exist. This is almost the same idea like before. Like it's almost like I'm just totally a vehicle for the greater good. So the person who has this attitude, right, that it's all one people, I'm just part of the greater Jewish people. So he feels as if the Jewish people are all like one body. The entire Jewish people is like one big person. And I myself, I'm just the nail of the smallest finger. Right? The Jewish people is a huge body, and I'm the fingernail of the baby finger. That's me. Right? Migufa klali. I'm just part of this huge body. And with this type of attitude, you don't feel that other people are separate from yourself. Right? We're all one. Because we're all just part of this huge body, so they're not separated from me. Ella bisachtus kechada mamish. All totally one unit, one being. And this is exactly the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Haftar reecha kamoicha. Love your fellow Jew as yourself. We're all one. Right? We're all one unit. We're all one being. And if a person stubs his toe, that hurts his whole body. The whole body's upset, right? It's sore. It's painful. So therefore, the whole body participates in what happens to the individual, because the individual is all one big party. After Recha Kamoicha, love your fellow Jew as yourself. Kamoicha Mamish, as yourself, literally as if it's yourself. Kamoicha Bli Hefrish Klal, without any separation at all. That's how the Maseilas Yesharim explains that verse. As if there's no separation between you and him. It's as if you were totally one. And just like with the body of a person, it's impossible for one organ to have a separate desire. Right? There's no separate desire. It's not, you know, I feel like going this way, but my arm wants to go that way. Right? There's no separate desire. There's no contrary opinion. The whole body works to fulfill the desire of the person, and there's no rebelliousness. Right? There's no individual opinions within your body, arguing opinions. Whatever person desires, so the entire person runs to do it. Something that a person doesn't want to do, so it's not possible that his finger wants to do it, right? His whole body doesn't want to do it, but his finger does want to do it. There's no such thing like that. So too, if someone will feel himself to be part of the whole, the lo b'shum hispardus, without any separation at all, yifshar shiyelo rotzen shiyavu mitzad hispardus, it becomes impossible for him to have an individual desire, right? It's a separate desire, right? What they want is this, but what I want is that. Right? That's because ultimately I unite with them, and therefore I want what everyone wants. So this is also the idea of forcing oneself, if one regards himself as part of the Jewish people, working on behalf and the goodness for the Jewish people. It also puts us in a situation where we're forced to do that which is right. Vehine. Now this is a very powerful idea. It's a very powerful tool, actually, in our own personal service. Because hine ha'yetzara kol ta'noisa bo'im tamid rak mitzad pratius. The yetzara, when he attacks us, an evil inclination comes to us telling us to do sins, to doing the wrong thing. When the Yetzer Hara comes to us, his claims, his arguments are always in terms of it's good for you. It's something that's for you. It's something that's for you personally. Right? This will be for your benefit. That's how he works with us. He's working with us that, you know, you will profit if you will do this, right? You'll speak Lashon Hara about someone, you'll feel good about it. You'll enjoy it, right? You'll get praise, whatever it is that you want, right? You will be stroked. You will have your desires fulfilled. The Yetzer Hara speaks to us in terms of us as individuals. That's how he attacks us. That if we're individuals, then we can do things for ourselves which he has a hand in. And therefore, even if he comes with cunningness, with slyness to try to mislead us, and he puts on garments and he wants to do it for the better of the good of all, sometimes the Eitz Hara comes to us and he says, this is something that benefits everyone. This is something that's really for the good of the Jewish people. And he puts on a whole act that we're really doing this for others. However, anyone with a little bit of insight, anyone who thinks about it a little bit, will see it clearly. The whole content of these desires, anything that he pulls us to do, so the whole idea behind what he's telling us to do is something which is individual. It's something that's for me. Right? That's really his weakness. That's where really we see his, where he reveals himself. Because ultimately we understand this is something that's just for the personal good of this individual, and therefore it's the Yetzer Hara involved here. That's the, he wants this special plan for you. Mi'ato, and from now, based on what we've just said, if a person will train himself, it's a type of thinking. You get used to thinking a certain way. So if a person will train himself to think, that I'm just a part of the whole, I'm a part of the Jewish people, right? So he makes himself that he's forced. So therefore the Yetzer Hara can't talk to him, because the Yetzer Hara can't talk to him about him as individual, because whatever's for me is for the whole group. Either you do it for the whole group, or you don't do it at all. If it's something that will benefit the whole group, I'm interested. If it's not for the whole group, then I'm not interested. So then the Yetzer Hara can't get in. This is a way to actually block out the Yetzer Hara. If a person will train himself to think of himself as a person who's for the whole, he's one for all, he's all for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's all for the Jewish people. So it makes it as if he's forced. He can do that which is the true desire of the true goodness and the true benefit of the nation, of the entire body of the Jewish people. And his individual desire disappears. Now this letter that he wrote, he's really speaking to students in Yeshiva Ponovitch. But we can translate this very much to our situation, because we are also part of a community. We're also part of a group. Right, there's the more of your immediate community, more family and friends, and then your neighbors, and then the entire city, and then ultimately the entire Jewish people. Right, it's all of Israel and all the Jewish people right through the world. So therefore the idea is now going to say, which he addresses it specifically to the yeshiva, is something that very much is true for ourselves as well. So let's just read these next words. I've learned from this idea that we just set out, this idea of making yourself muchach. I've learned something which is very important in regard to the smallness of our spiritual standing. We're on a very low spiritual standing. We are accustomed to see ourselves that even though we're in a situation of Torah people, right, people who are living a Torah lifestyle, Torah communities, we look at it as if came here by chance with these people together, right? You moved into a certain neighborhood, by chance, this is your neighbor on this side, this is your neighbor on the other side, this is the people you live around, these are the people at shul, these are the people that you see in the supermarket. So we're used to seeing our situation as if it was all by chance. My chance, these are my neighbors, these are my friends, these are the people that I live with. I will call echad adayin hu oylam bifnatzmo, but I'm still an individual. I'm an individual living within this neighborhood, living within this town, and I'm one individual amongst all these people who've been thrown together. Like a single apple that was thrown together with a whole lot of other apples, all into one big bag. And now I'm stuck with all these apples in one bag, but I am my apple, right? I am my apple, and they just threw me in this bag with another 30, 40 apples, and they're all around me, and all these other apples, but I'm me. Right? That's the way that's our normal way we look at our situation, wherever we might be. And therefore, whatever I do will be for my benefit. I'll do what's good for me. You know, what's for them is, you know, everyone takes care of himself, everyone worries about himself, and I'll do what's good for me. I'm not mashkofa zois. However, this type of outlook, this type of attitude, withholds us from any type of benefit, of real benefit, Kolis alus, kol to'elus, kolis alus, for personal benefit and personal growth. Just looking at it myself as an individual, what's good for me, I do for myself. My neighbors will take care of themselves, and I'll take care of myself, and everyone's worried about himself. This attitude itself is a block that stops us from our reaching spiritual benefit, personal benefit, and personal growth. The Ebes HaYeshivi Etzem Uchand, because really, he's speaking about the yeshiva is all one unit, and really we have to say the same thing. Our communities really are all one unit. We're one unit. The Jewish people is all one unit, and we are a framework with our neighbors and friends. We're one unit. Well, echad ve'echad shev yeshivu chelek miklal shalem. Everyone within the community is part of a greater whole. Lo shayach sheyeh lo rotzon nifrad. And therefore it doesn't fit in that he has a private desire, his private agenda. Rather, he has to nullify himself for the benefit of the group. And that's his responsibility. If we look at ourselves as just being a part of the whole, then we'll automatically be very careful not to hurt anyone else through our, you know, just acting in a thoughtless way. You do things without thinking it through sometimes. You do something in a rash way. So automatically, if you see yourself as part of the community, you're almost automatically sensitive not to hurt anyone else, not to do anything that will hurt someone else. Right? I want to do this and this in my house. Maybe the neighbors will object. Maybe it's not good for the neighbors. Right? So then automatically, you're in that. Automatically, if you think of yourself as part of the whole, automatically you will refrain from hurting other people. This is what we're gaining from this type of attitude. Nifla dovam oid. It's a very wondrous idea of emesu, and it's true. This is the truth. This is the true path. Umiata novin. And from here we can understand as goydel erich avas a yeshiva. From this we have to understand the greatness of loving our community. Kol echod ve'echod mimenu roi shineov es yeshivasen b'chol elavaveinu. Each one should love his community with all of his heart. That he's seeking with all of his strength in order to elevate his community and to bring his community to perfection through our conduct, through our learning, ideas that we learn we can use for the benefit of our community, of our people, whether we learn halacha or whether we're learning Musa ideas, alidei oimek levovius tfiloseinu, or depth of prayer, through my prayers, deep, heartfelt prayers, I'm bringing benefit to my whole community. I'm not just working as an individual, I'm working on behalf of all, and I'm achieving this through my learning, through my prayers, in kacha nase kulanu. And if we do act in this way, loa yeshiv levat isale el kulanu kol echod ve'echod isale b'mayla moed moed. And if you do this, if you do act on behalf of the community, the real profit is that each individual grows at an amazing pace. You know, the best way to help yourself is to become a community person. When you're working for others, then you will have the ultimate growth for yourself. Really, this is the argument. This is why it's really for our benefit. It's if you're really concerned about yourself, so then become a community person, because that's the best way that you can elevate yourself. We've made ourselves as if we're almost forced. We've chosen to be forced for anything that's beneficial. He's speaking to his students in Elul, so he says, let's use Elul for this. But we can use this is an idea that's universal. It's an idea for all year round as well. This itself will bring us to the day of judgment. That it should be a successful, we should succeed in the heavenly help that we ask for. Right? Once we're in the right stream, we're doing things right, so then automatically everything works right. If you use an appliance the right way, use it in the perfect way, use it exactly according to the instructions. So automatically everything works as it should work. Right? Nothing gets jammed because you're using it properly. So therefore all the brachas, the heavenly brachas will pour down on us as well. And this is how ultimately we merit. And he brings here, this was one of the big advices of Rabbi Sol Salanta. He said, "Biu mashom adoni zikni." I go on Rabbi Sol Salanta. My grandfather, Rabbi Sol Salanta, said, "Ke'etze gedoyla Rosh Hashanah hi behiliskal b'sechakla." The great advice for Rosh Hashanah, but again, it's for all Yerushalayim as well, is to make ourselves a part of the community, that we are a part of the whole. Right, that you make yourself indispensable. You start providing some sort of service to the community that they really need you. And then, right, you merit within the community, that itself elevates you. And just, I'd like to take just a few more minutes. He's got a final idea he wants to add to this. As a proof to, like as an extra idea to, on the same theme. I'm going to do this quite quickly. The first two commands of the Ten Commands, the Jewish people, we heard it from Hashem face to face. Right? The first two commands, the whole Jewish people heard. Right? And this is explicit in the verses. Because the other commands, the other eight commands, are all written in the third person. Right? Right, don't say the name of Hashem in vain. So it speaks of Hashem in the third person. Right? Don't treat Hashem like this. Don't treat Hashem like that. Hashem is in the third person. That's the language of the other eight commands of the Ten Commands. Right? But the first two commands, I am Hashem your God who took you out of Egypt. Don't have other gods before me. The first two commands are spoken in first person. Hashem is speaking to us. And that's because really that's how it was. Hashem was speaking directly to the Jewish people. They heard the words of Hashem. The other eight commands they heard from Moshe, and that therefore Hashem fell into third person. But the first two commands, Hashem was in first person. The Inyan Ponim B'Ponim, this idea of face to face, that we have this ability of being face to face with Hashem, Hasogas Halev HaBihir B'Yisa, this is the highest type of clarity. The highest clarity is when we grasp Hashem as almost as if we see Him. Because, you know, if you're talking to someone on the phone, sometimes the line is not so clear, so you don't always catch. But you're standing face to face with a person, and you're talking directly to him, and it's you and him, and that's it. So then you get the highest communication. The highest communication is face to face. Nothing can beat face to face, right? So therefore, similarly with our connection with Hashem, that's the highest level that we can be face to face. That we're opposite Him, we're in front of Him, and not at a distance away, not hidden. It says in the Midrash on Shir HaShirim, when the Jewish people heard the first command, Anuichi Hashem Elokecho, Nitka Talmud Torah Belibam, the words of Torah became engraved in their hearts. It was engraved, it was impressed into their hearts. And again, Soga Bia, which was a clarity. The minute they heard the first command, there was a clarity. The entire Torah became absorbed into their hearts. Asher Begir Leah Lo Shaych Shikho, to such a degree that they couldn't forget it. They heard the Torah with such clarity, with such directness, it was not possible to forget it. And the idea of forgetfulness, what is forgetfulness? What does it mean when you forget something? Oh, I forgot. What does it mean when you say you forgot? So Rav Dessler says as follows, Gera shikru hu asher isyaninus acheris machekas vimenus iskaraks finyazik. Forgetfulness is because you're so interested in other things that you distance yourself from your focus on this thing. You forget things that are not important to you. You say it's important, but it's not. If it was really important, you wouldn't forget it. Right. So therefore, the fact that you forgot is not such a... So this idea that Hashem spoke directly, so therefore it had such an important occasion, so that it was unforgettable. It was an unforgettable experience, literally, and you couldn't forget it. Right? And with that, the Yetzirah has got no place. The Yetzirah doesn't... He can't open his mouth even. It's you and Hashem. Right, what can he tell you? I mean, you're directly with Hashem. How can he come and pull you away? You're mamish connected to Hashem. You're directly speaking directly to Hashem. How can the Yetzirah even come and approach you? Which is to say that they accepted at that moment to fulfill the words of Torah. They were accepted the Torah of themselves with total devotion to such a degree. It's the same idea. They became as if they were forced to do the will of Hashem. Excuse me, I skipped a line of the four. That midrash said two things. When they heard the first command, so the Torah was embedded into their hearts. And when they heard the second command, that you shall have no other gods, so the Yetzirah was uprooted from their hearts. The Yetzirah was uprooted from their hearts. So that's the same idea we just said, right? That the Torah became so important to them that the Yetzirah doesn't have any place. He can't. There's no room for him. We're not listening to him. We're totally uninterested. Right? Just, you know, go away. I don't want to hear what you have to say. I'm really not interested in whatever you're selling. I don't want to buy it. We bought already. Okay, go away. Right? So that's this idea, to have such a connection that the only thing important to us is the will of Hashem, and anything else becomes just falls away. Isa b'sfarim hakadoshim. It's also brought in the holy sfarim. Ki inyan zeh shmias mipiak vura ponim uponim. This idea of hearing from Hashem face to face. Zok elov al yedei yichan Israel. The Jewish people, how did they merit to hear these first two commands face to face? How did they get to this level that Hashem spoke to them face to face, and they had this unforgettable experience? What was the key to reaching this experience? What was the key to meriting this experience? So the Sfarim say, right, because the pasuk says, Zochu Elav, they merited it al yedei Yichan Yisrael. It says that the Jewish people camped, singular. The word Yichan is singular, kulam belev echod, and the rabbis say, like with a single heart. The Jewish people was like one body with a single heart, which means with a single desire. Everyone wanted the same thing. Everyone was interested in the same thing, right? Which is the exact same idea. In other words, it's all totally united, and real unity means wanting the same thing. If they're all one unit, then they're forced to act in a certain way. They're forced to act as a single body, and then if they're at that level, then they can merit also that HaKadosh Baruch Hu faces them directly and speaks to them directly. Just as a last insight on this, we can say that even you say, other people aren't doing it, so why should I do it? Other people are not feeding themselves as part of the whole, so why should I do it? It doesn't work like that. If you put yourself into that state of mind, it automatically affects, firstly, it affects your interaction with everyone else. Mm-hmm. And it puts you into that level. It doesn't matter what other people are doing. It doesn't matter what other people are thinking. The fact that you personally become a person interested in the good of the community, that itself will elevate you, and it will change your whole attitude, your actions, your way you think, the way you speak to people. All of that will elevate you onto a different level.